Ecclesiastes chapter 12, I believe we'll finish this up tonight. I say that guardedly because we may not, I think we will, we should get done tonight. And
you just can't judge how both the rest of us can be.
Yeah, that's right. I've learned you can, you don't know from one class bridge to the next. That's what you're going to get in the way of comments. Wednesday nights are always less comments. I've noticed that. I feel like sometimes halfway through we should maybe stop and do some jumping jacks for a couple of minutes, you know, just to get everybody kind of woke up again. Wednesday nights are tough in that regard. But now that I've said that, you'll be on top of the game now, you know. In the latter part of chapter 11 of Ecclesiastes, verse 9, be happy, young man, while you are young, and let your heart give you joy in the days of your youth. Follow the ways of your heart and whatever your eyes see, but know that for all these things God will bring you to judgment. So then banish anxiety from your heart and cast off the troubles of your body, for youth and vigor are meaningless. We discussed Sunday some points from the passage there. Seize the day, sort of, is what Solomon is saying. And to seek God early in your life. Remember God in your youth is the point and emphasis. And in part what he's saying too is enjoy life. There is, in fact, so much to enjoy life. And we talked about the ideas of being young and just looking out there at things that you can do and things that you can enjoy. Do that. Keeping in mind that all the things that you do will be brought into judgment. And so there's a limit as far as what we can do, you know, and be right before God. But there's so many things that we can do. Enjoy life and take advantage of your youth, because soon your youth will fade away. Chapter 12, verse 1, remember your Creator in the days of your youth, before the days of trouble come, and the years approach when you will say, I find no pleasure in them. Before the sun and the light and the moon and the stars grow dark, and the clouds return after the rain. We discussed again the importance of remembering your Creator. I'm not sure how much we said about remember. We said some things. I wanted to touch on that again. And I want to ask you, you know, when you read this here where Solomon is saying, remember your Creator in the days of your youth, what is involved in remembering? What's the point of emphasis here? What's it mean to remember? Think about that a minute. Huh?
To live in a way that honors God.
To honor God. He's in our thoughts in that way.
Well, and I think that's what I was thinking, that God is in our thoughts. He's in our minds, he's in our hearts, and everything we say and do and the decisions we make, that we are remembering that, mm-hmm. that fact.
Mm-hmm. How many times have we said to our children, do you not remember what I told you? And usually, no. I've told you over and over and over. Huh? You remember that?
Right. How about innocence?
You know, there can be truly an innocence in us when we are truly thinking and focused on what God says. And in our youth, there is innocence. That changes with time. But maybe in part what he's saying here is to have that innocence of youth, we can only do so when we remember God and we live in that way.
It's also remember who you are. When you're not with the family and you're out in the world,
yeah.
You don't forget who you are,
right.
Where you come from, because what you do reflects on the family.
Right.
And this is a way of...
What about that spiritual family?
The same thing, yes.
The relationship with the Creator, the one who is our Father.
And yeah. I think what Solomon's trying to get across here.
Absolutely.
Remember who you are.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, it's like, okay, in your youth, seize the day. Enjoy things of this life. Get out there and do some things, remembering the qualification. Remember that you'll be called into judgment for these things. Remember your Creator in the days of your youth. Before, here we are going into the next section, before the days of trouble come. Here's where we spent most of our time Sunday, talking about these things. In the years that approach, when you will say, I find no pleasure in them, And we started talking then about some of these passages here, about what happens when you get old and how the body changes. And that's what he's talking about here. You know, in verse 3, when the keepers of the house tremble, maybe that's your hands and your arms, and strong men stoop over, and the grinders cease because they are few. Your teeth are wore out, or maybe they're gone. You know, we understand, you know, what he's saying here. And those looking through the windows grow dim. And some have said, well, maybe that's talking about the eyes. You just can't see like you used to. You know, I'm starting to understand the aggravation of having cataracts. I've actually got cataracts. I'm almost 55 years old. I thought only old people got cataracts. Well, evidently, mine are not bad enough to do anything about. You know, the eye doctor says, oh, this is nothing at all. I said, you don't need surgery. I said, well, when might I have surgery? He says, I'm going to estimate probably about 15 years from now. Really? It's aggravating me now. He said, you ain't seen nothing yet.
And you won't.
Yeah. Okay. And so it's like, really? Yeah. I understand here. When those looking through the windows grow dim, when the eyesight is just not what it used to be, and the doors of the street are closed. That was about the last thing we talked about Sunday, I think. You know, the doors of the street are closed. It's just harder to get around. You know, we had... Most of you met my dad and stepmother here on Sunday. They're both 82. And they drove their way over here. They still negotiate and get around fine. I say fine. It's fine for dad to drive when I'm not in the car with him. Something has happened in the last year and he's scaring us all terribly. Those days are coming. And Sandra and I have really just noticed just how much more difficult it is for them to get around, you know. I mean, they still get around, but it's not like it used to be. They're 82. And those things change, you know. And the doors of the street are closed. You just can't get out and just go as you used to go. It amazes me to hear Dad and Irene talk about, well, we wanted to go there, but we just decided not to. It was just getting too hard. And it just tears me up, you know, but that's part of life. And that's what Solomon's saying. And he's ranging, he's talking here, the full range, the whole gambit of when you're young and there's things before you and life is full. Get out and enjoy all these things because there's going to come a day where you can't get out and do all the same things. That you just can't do that. And the sound of grinding fades. I'm not sure what kind of grinding you'd want to hear. But I think it's just the idea that you don't hear like you used to hear. Sandra accuses me of not being able to hear now, but I think timing has a lot to do with what I hear and what I don't. I don't know. Now she has claimed it's been too much loud music, you know, because if music is on, it's supposed to be loud. There's only one volume. It's loud. To which Sandra always says, you're going to go deaf listening to that. To which I always reply, same way. Huh? What? And she goes, oh. But now I'm actually starting to get a little concerned about that. You know, and I have noticed I'm trying to be a little more careful about not having it turned up quite as loud. You know, because it's a reality. Your hearing is not as good as time goes on. Yes, I just can't hear it as well. That's what it is. Maybe Sandra was right. I should have turned it down. When men rise up at the sound of birds, I think that's what. What does that mean? When men rise up at the sound of, do birds wake you up?
Oh, I think yeah. I've always noticed that the elderly tend to wake up pretty easily and early.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think that's kind of getting the idea.
Nights aren't as long.
Yeah. Yeah.
Up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
That's right. Not because they want to. Just because they wake up and sometimes the least sound might wake them up. I think that's the idea of that. When men rise up at the sound of birds, but all their songs grow faint. You know, even just the sound of the chirping of birds wake them up, even though they can't hear as well as they used to. You know, just the slightest noise, you know. When men are afraid of heights, I think I'm understanding that. You know, a roof that I used to maybe have scaled years ago, you know, with a pickaxe, going to the peak of a roof to cut a hole in a roof, I don't have any desire to do that anymore at all. Because if I fall off that roof, I mean, it would have hurt a long time ago. I might not get up now. There's something that happens there, and there's a different fear of heights even. And the dangers in the streets. I mean, some things change, and sometimes older people are scared of things they didn't used to be afraid of. I think that's the idea, you know, of what he's saying. And what is this? When the almond tree blossoms, what's getting old have to do with an almond tree? Yeah. Rick, you're looking more and more like an almond tree.
Look in the mirror.
An almond tree has like a very pale white type blossoms, you know, when it comes out. Yeah, that's right. I'm going to be right behind you, I'm telling you.
That's like California coming out.
That's what it is, yeah. That's right, that's right. And the grasshopper drags himself along. Oh, wait, grasshoppers don't drag themselves. They jump, don't they?
When they're young.
Until they can't jump anymore. Until they just... I mean, when we see a grasshopper and we're stomping around and it doesn't jump and it's just kind of moving along, I mean, it's injured or it's dying. We understand that. Sure. And when the grasshopper drags himself along and desire no longer is stirred, I think that's having to do with appetite. And you can kind of apply that in different ways. Desire to eat, sexual desire diminishes in time. You can see those applications. And then the conclusion of that is, then man goes to his eternal home and mourners go about the streets. What would you say about that last part? I mean, what are some comments that come to mind on that last part?
I think as you get older, you just desire in general wanes. Less interested in pursuing the things you used to pursue, but you may not be as driven in your business or your other pursuits that where you used to be, and you were just wide open, and now you're just like, I'll get to it when I get to it, kind of thing.
Let somebody else go after that. Right. Yeah, let somebody else take care of that.
Right.
What else?
When we look at the whole chapter, we see that it started out by saying, remember your creator in the youth, and this was important as he turns into what is going to happen when you leave that. But when you're in your youth, everything is black and white. Everything is clear. You understand everything. And so you have a dedication to God. It's clear, pure, no stopping it. As we get older, there's all kinds of reasons why we can't be as enthusiastic as we used to be. And so we need to be very careful, because we could get complacent about our dedication to God. But even though it was tremendous when we were in our youth, it's going to fade if we are not very careful. I have to keep reminding myself, I'm getting closer to the final exam.
Yeah.
I need to study just a little bit harder, maybe.
Prepare. Well, here's another thing. Going back to your point here with remember your creator in the days of your youth, in this section, one of the last things he says, then man goes to his eternal home. Okay, we're looking at the far spectrums of life, provided one lives a long life, which we're not guaranteed. But even if we live a long life and we have enjoyed everything that we could while we were young, we have given our heart to the joys of the day of our youth, still, there's going to come a time when we don't find pleasure that we once found because of age.
Even if our life is not long, it is still all of it.
That's right. Yeah, no matter how many years we live, when we die, life is mine.
Yeah.
That's right. Okay, now, comment some on this last part. He says, then a man goes to his eternal home and mourners go about the streets. What do you say? I mean, what's just part of Solomon's conclusion here? I mean, he's got more to say, but in this section right here, here's what he's saying. Then man goes to his eternal home and mourners go about the streets. What do you say?
You die, people mourn over your passing.
Okay. Make some application. Make some points. I mean, what is the significance of this? I mean, he is saying, then man goes to his eternal home. What is the conclusion here that Solomon has come to about life and death?
There is an eternal existence there.
Yeah, there's something there. There's an eternal. There's something eternal. Okay? There are those today who would deny that. You know, when you die, you're dead. You know, you're dead all over. You know, like Rover, you're dead all over. You know, that's it. That's all there is to it. It's not Solomon's conclusion. Here again, we're trying to think about all the 11 chapters prior that's brought us to this point. You know, all the things that Solomon has done. All the things that he has tested and tried and experimented with. Everything that he has done. And here he is older, later in his life. And what is he talking about? What is he focusing on? What is his conclusion to some things here? You have to think about that a bit.
It's all meaningless. The end is what counts.
Everything that he has said along, how many times has he said vanity of vanities or life is meaningless? You know, how many times has he said that over and over and over again? Here, I don't recall. And perhaps there is, but I don't recall another passage in Ecclesiastes where he has talked about eternal life. Here's the conclusion that he's coming to. I mean, here he has done and he's experimented with, he has lived life to the fullest. What is that in view of eternal life?
Meaningless.
Empty. Vanity of vanities.
The vapor that appears for a short time and
vanishes away. You know, now, and have you noticed this? That it is those with the most gray hairs, it's those with the most wrinkles, it's those who have lived the longest that seem to come to a greater understanding and appreciation of life that is to come? Have you listened sometimes to those who lead prayers, who are the oldest, that are sometimes the ones that seem to me are the ones who have connected with God the most when you listen to their prayers because they know their time is short? You ever notice that? Sometimes. Because as you get older and as you know life is short, no matter how you look at it, there is a desire to be close to God.
And just like Solomon has said, everything that we've done over our lives has been a long time. There's been a lot of interesting things and a lot of things that really took time and effort and desire, but when it was all said and done, it was vanity. Mm-hmm. Because the company you made will also fade. The dollars that you made
are gone.
They just sort of shrink. But the whole thing is, there's still something to look forward. There's a reason to
Absolutely.
Be and to continue to be.
Something to look forward to above all of those other things.
Because the rest of it doesn't make a difference.
That's right, but eternity does.
Yeah. But one thing I don't see here, though, is him talking about the judgment. It says it's the desire fades, the desire fails. The desire to live fails if you die. Mm-hmm. Go back to the dust. It says the spirit goes back to the
That's what he's coming to.
Who gave it. But what if it's not the kind of spirit God wants anymore?
Mm-hmm.
And that's not mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
So there's an under the sun. And then this is the after, I've lived a good life. I'm doing fine. You know, God will accept what I've done. I'm looking forward to going.
Well, Well,
still leaving something out.
Of course, back in verse 9, you know, when he talks about, be happy, young man, while you're young, let you, and give your heart to the joy of the days of your youth. Follow the ways of your heart, whatever your eyes see. But know that for all these things, God will bring you into judgment. So there's that view of looking toward judgment. And what's the last verse? Oh, yeah, the final conclusion that he comes to. It's back to that spiritual thing when he comes to that. Interesting. I mean, you bring that perspective up. This week, two people I know were buried, Tuesday and today. And Robert Tate died with a brain aneurysm. He was just in his mid-40s. And I have grieved over his death. He was in the hospital for about a week on life support, and he finally passed away. I've grieved about that from the standpoint that Robert always struggled in faith. We have talked for hours about things regarding faith and had a lot of life struggles. You know, details are necessary, just a lot of issues in life, and made some poor choices. As far as human eyes can tell, he was not faithful to the Lord in the last couple of years. And he died. And it brings a lot of grief. Ed Burgess passed away on Sunday night. Ed was in his mid-80s. He has seemed old ever since I've known him for the last 27 years. He was just always old and hunched over and looked like he was 100 years old. He's always looked like that in his. And he passed away Sunday night. And I'm sorry for the loss there, but people will not be grieving in the same way. Because he was a godly man in every way that man could tell. And as far as we can know and see, has every reason to look forward to an eternal home, even as Solomon mentions here. What a contrast. What a contrast. And I know members of the church that this week that are grieving over the loss of one that they loved and admired and found faith from, but they're grieving as well from one who died that was unfaithful to the Lord, that was no longer in fellowship with the Lord's people. Very different kind of grief. And it gives us a moment to kind of step back a little bit and just think about our own lives and how does that sort out for us. I mean, what Solomon is saying is we're all going to die. If we're blessed to live to be old, we get to enjoy all of these attributes of being old. You know, if we live that long, you know, but in the end, we're still going to die. But at least he makes this point here that man goes to his eternal home, you know, that death comes. I think, you know, for us, to those who are Christians, to those who are standing right before the Lord, that's a glorious thought. I mean, eternal life, you know, becomes, you know, our hope right there. And every reason to find hope in that. Well, let's go on and see how does this work out. I mean, he's drawing his conclusions. He's pulling it all together now. You know, verse 6, remember him before the silver cord is severed and the golden bowl is broken, before the pitcher is shattered at the spring or a wheel broken at the well. And dust returns to the ground it came from, and the Spirit returns to God who gave it. I'm not really sure what some of the analogies mean. Everybody's got some different ideas on these, more so than the previous verses. The silver cord severed and the golden bowl broken. I think it's still just a description of just the body breaking down. you know, and the death that comes with that. Because his point being is that the dust returns to the ground where it came from. Exactly what God said back in Genesis 3. You know, here's what's going to happen. This is it. The spirit returns to God who gave it. It was God who breathed spirit into man and gave man life. And returns to God. Meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher. Everything is meaningless. Everything is vanity. You know, he's saying, verse 9. Not only was the teacher wise, but also he imparted knowledge to the people. He pondered and searched out and set in order many proverbs. The teacher searched to find just the right words, and what he wrote was upright and true. The words of the wise are like goads, their collected sayings like firmly embedded nails, given by one shepherd. Be warned, my son, of anything in addition to them. Of making many books, there is no end, and much study wearies the body. Now all has been heard. Here is the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God will bring every deed into judgment, including every hidden thing, whether it is good or whether it is evil. The final conclusion here. The whole duty of man. When it's all said and done, as some have said, it is all said and done. Here's the final conclusion. This is the final remark. To fear God and keep his commandments. This is the whole duty of man. I really don't know how Solomon, how he stood before God as he ended his life. I mean, we know from the history given to us about King Solomon, it sure seems like he'd worked his way off track. The many wives that he had had, the foreign wives he had had, messed with his head. And his relationship with God was changed. If this was written really at the end of his life, which some would presume, there seems to be this understanding of life and the need to be in a relationship with God. And as he's giving us the conclusion here, this is the whole duty of man, to fear God and keep his commandments. That there's nothing else that's more important. That all these other aspects of life, all the things that he has tried, all the experiments that he has been able to make, really tell us and prove nothing in view of missing a relationship with God.
Now, this has nothing about vanity or worthlessness here, but everything else he tried
was vanity. Isn't that interesting? How many times has he said, vanity of vanities, or meaningless and meaningless? But when he comes to this point right here, there's nothing vain about the conclusion. This is the real deal. You know, this is what really matters right here. I mean, this is the culmination of the wisdom of the teacher. You know, this is the culmination of the great experiment of life that Solomon has been on for all of these years. To fear God and keep his commandments. For God will bring every deed into judgment, including every hidden thing, whether it is good or whether it is evil. Hebrews chapter 4 says much the same thing. We're all going to sit before the judgment seat of God, and we will be judged for the things we have done in this life, whether it's good or evil. You know, Solomon had concluded that a long time before. Some of your thoughts.
Back here at verse 6, he's remembering him. And he's talking about the golden bowl is broken, the pitcher is shattered at the well, the wheel is broken. Each of those were useful vessels, as we are.
Mm-hmm. But
they're broken.
They're broken. They come; those things come to an end.
So that's going to end.
That's right.
This is all that matters.
That's right. That really helps. That's good. All of those were useful things and useful vessels, but they're all broken. It comes to an end.
I think maybe one of the reasons he says, "Remember, thou my friend, during the days of thy youth," is that maybe he realizes that he. as well as he should have with all the things.
If there was anybody who had an understanding of what it was to obey God, shouldn't Solomon have got that? I mean, his father, King David, not perfect in any way. I mean, David's sins are revealed to us in very graphic ways. And yet David's redeeming quality was his willingness to repent of his sins and confess them. All of that being an open book for Solomon. You know, surely Solomon should have had some understanding here of the importance of obeying God all the way through life. And wouldn't you think? I mean, one reason that Solomon was chosen to serve as king was by the choice of God. And Solomon demonstrated for many years his faithfulness to God. He said there's that period of time where he seems to have kind of lost his way. Man, I'm hoping, it's not hope against hope, I trust, that we're reading of this, of a return back to a relationship with God when we read the last things that Solomon wrote.
Fear God, keep his commandments, for this is man's all. Can't get any more simple than that.
Right.
Look how complicated, how convoluted, how difficult, how painful we make things when we get all wrapped up in our lives away from that.
Right. That's right. Life becomes confusing. We have hard choices to make. We don't know which way to go. You know, we're all about what is in this life. And if that's all we're consumed with, we've missed it all. Fear God and keep his commandments. That's what it's really all about. I mean, it's like, you know, preacher B. Bowman has said many, many times, if you miss heaven, you've missed everything. Really? Doesn't matter who you are in this life. Doesn't matter what you have. Doesn't matter what you've done. If you miss heaven, you've missed everything. I wonder if Solomon was getting that. I mean, when we talk, again, we've said this so many times, when we talk about someone who did it all, tried it all, put his finger in every pot, so to speak, got to experiment with things that we could never even understand or dream of, had the wisdom beyond what we can fully understand, you know, and even at that seemingly struggled in his spiritual relationship with God, is finally at that point of saying, oh, that stuff really doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you're rich or poor. Sometimes if you're poor, good things happen. If you're rich, bad things happen. You know, and the other way around. Life's not always fair, he said. You know, we see all of these different conclusions that were drawn. In the end, all that really matters is a relationship with God.
I feel encouraged about him at the end of his life as well. As he was a young man, God saw that he was somebody that he could give wisdom to and he would be able to do it. And we're also told that we're never trusted with anything that we can't handle.
That's right. That's right. God's not going to tempt us beyond what we are able to endure. 1 Corinthians 10,
and
verse 13.
I think if he collected, he chose Solomon for this position. Mm-hmm. He knew he could handle it. Mm-hmm. He had faith in it.
God wasn't going to set him up for failure.
No.
Still going to be Solomon's choice, his decision.
It's still his choice,
you know.
And he had to come to this conclusion.
And what, as Solomon said, I've kept my wisdom about me all the way through all of that.
And I think this says he did.
Yeah, I understand.
Answer your question, why don't we get it? I think my answer would be because it's too simple.
Yeah.
Mankind is looking for something more complicated. It's got to be harder than this in order to get to heaven.
If always looking for something harder.
Heaven, it's got to be harder to get there.
Where's that come from?
To do this.
Where's that come from? I mean, what do you think? I mean, when we step back from the big picture, we can see God's plan. It's spoken through Solomon. Fear God and keep his commandments. This is the whole duty of man. Why do we lose track of that? Why?
We live in a physical, earthly world where we cannot see God. It's got to be by faith.
By faith. By faith.
Yeah. You saw it in the garden. They wanted for nothing.
Mm-hmm. What was the influence there, Neil?
But they wanted.
What was the influence there?
Satan.
I mean, do we think somehow Satan is not involved in this plague that we have now? Trying to figure out life? I mean, what Gary is saying here is right. I mean, fundamentally, this should not be so hard to figure out. What was hard to figure out with, if you eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, you will die?
Somebody else is whispering in your ear something else.
But it wasn't that hard, was it? I mean, God's instruction was not that hard. But then you enter Satan into the picture. And look at what happens. I mean, it's the same story over and over again. Different people, different names, different things happen. But it's always the influence of Satan and sin that changes the direction and the path of men. We see that, don't we?
Right? Satan knows where he's going, and he wants to take a lot of people with him.
Doing his best to take us all with him. That's what he wants, right?
And why the Lord should pray like this and lead us not into temptation.
Yeah.
Deliver us from evil.
Daily. That's right. Because daily Satan is working on us. Yeah. Bless you.
This idea of making of books, many books, there's no end to it.
Yeah.
This could be that, why do we continue to make more books? Well, I mean, there's books about every possible subject, but among other things might be there, we're trying to do it our way as opposed to God's way. We're trying to figure out things our way. We're trying to figure out things ourselves as opposed to trusting that God got it right and he knows what he's doing. So if we don't trust this one book, then the continuation of making many books is going to be no end to it, because man always thinks that he somehow, it's like children get to a certain age, they think they know more than their parents. And we sometimes are judges of God. Well, we wouldn't have done that way.
Yeah.
We could do this better. There should be peace on earth. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is the way you need to do that. And all kinds of, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, we question God in the same way children sometimes question their parents. We really do. Mom, what's wrong with that picture? Everything. Yeah. Wow. Any final comments you have in Ecclesiastes?
Good study. It was very good.
I've enjoyed the study a lot. I mean, there's been some chapters, the earlier part was so depressing in some ways, pessimistic, cynical, you know, that in some ways was a little bit difficult to kind of work through. Now, the only thing that I think saved it to me as far as the study is when he would draw those little mini conclusions along the way. But all of that was prepping us and bringing us to the last third of the book.
It was meant to be depressing.
You're right, because all of those things that he was trying and learning didn't really lead to this. The final conclusion.
And life is depressing.
When life under the sun, no matter how grand it may be for a period of time, is temporary. And you know, there's, it can be very depressing.
It falls short of giving us full satisfaction.
That's right. Full satisfaction is not going to be found in life under the sun.
We see evidence of it everywhere.
Yeah. Trying to find some level of happiness there that can't be found.
You know, I was listening to a sermon the other day by Ralph Walker, and he said that anything that's new and improved is telling you that you need to be discontent with what you now have. Yeah. And that's kind of the whole the whole point is that whatever it is you've got isn't good enough. And that's, you know, we see it isn't.
That's advertising.
But we're not going to find it in something
that's exactly
new and improved.
Right.
Right. You know, all scripture is inspired by God, profitable, doctrine for proof, correction. And this is included for us to
right.
To
well, it becomes very real, doesn't it? You know, when you go through this. Because sometimes there's some things we see that we can see in our own lives. We'll work our way through that. Good thoughts. I appreciate very much your comments as we've went through this. You've made the class. You've made it good. You've made it interesting.